Ah, you dickheads.
Welcome to episode 33 of Double Dodge. This one's called Back from the Shadows. Campbell.
Boom shakalaka. Oh, yeah, mate. Yeah. This is good. I'm here.
We have actually a very special guest this time around, hence the title of the episode.
Who was it again? I can't fucking remember.
It was the one, the only Jordan Knack himself.
Oh, yes. No, I do remember now. Yes.
Yeah. Fantastic. And we talked to Jordan about high-level strategy, of all things.
Get out.
No, this time it was a legit discussion about high-level strategy.
Nice.
Probability theory, the application of chess strategy to Guild Ball.
Yeah. There was some meth talk in there, wasn't there?
There was a little bit of meth talk, yeah. Yeah, we talked about meth as well.
Yeah.
Smoke, inject, what's your strategy?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I do even believe we looked at Cubism versus Impressionism as well. I think we touched on that.
It was a wide-ranging conversation. It was a little more highbrow than we're used to, but we did manage to drag it down to our usual level at some points. So,
yeah, we like to scrape the bottom of the barrel. That's where I come in.
Rest assured, remnant listeners.
Remnant. Oh god, no! He was a champ. He definitely went up a few notches in my book. I've had a few conversations with him since. He's a great guy. Understands a lot about the game and has really stepped into a Yoda / Miyagi kind of role in the community, which I like. I like. He's helping people out now, so this is really cool.
He has been a divisive and polarizing figure in the Guild Ball community, but what you can't deny, he was a champion of the game, and he's lost none of that intellectual edge. So it was a really good chat. Yeah. Shall we spring forth from the shadows?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. We'll get spend the four influence, and then we'll take it back to the shadows.
Wang 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 wang.
Nice.
It's called a wang back.
It's a wang back.
It's like one of those plot cards, man. Wang back.
And on the line, we have a man. Some say he disappeared. He did a bit of a Sasquatch, and we're not sure if he ever existed in the first place. But we like to think at Double Dodge, he just basically came back from the shadows. One Mr. Jordan Knack. Jordan, how are you, sir?
I'm good. I'm even better. I'd be even better if you pronounced my name right.
All right, can you correct me? Because in Australian fashion, we like to get surnames wrong, or entire names even.
It's a Knack.
Knack. And here was I trying to be highbrow. That'll teach me.
Wait, was it Knack last time, or was it Knock last time?
We probably got it wrong last time, too.
I think we had the same conversation last time.
Oh, fantastic. This is how much we are scrubs at interviewing and Guild Ball. And in true Double Dodge fashion, we'd like to fire three questions at you. I hope they're not the same three questions we asked last time.
Jordan, Mr. Knack, it's so nice to have you here. First question, why did you stop playing Guild Ball competitively?
Well, I took a new home under a rock. So it turns out when you live under a rock, it's pretty hard to make tournaments regularly.
I feel you're deflecting. Could you go into more detail?
Well, I don't know. I'm not a geologist.
Question number two. What are you playing now instead of Guild Ball?
I guess mostly chess.
So you've gone back to your main wheelhouse. You're back in your comfort zone?
Yeah, mostly. I've been playing a fair amount of Euro-style board games as well.
Any notable ones that we should know about?
Well, didn't we actually play a game online of Lords of Waterdeep?
Yeah, Lords of Waterdeep. Great game. Crushed me. It was brutal.
Yeah, I remember that one.
Oh, man, it's like playing against the fucking machine. Like, what have I got? I've got meat in my head, unlike you. You seem to have a supercomputer. I call bullshit. Question number three. What have you got to say to Alex Botts?
Who?
I'm not even sure if Jordan's trolling at the moment or if he's just, like, been under that rock that long. I don't know.
It's hard to know, but I feel... I feel we may have just caused another diplomatic incident, but that's fine.
Anything I can do to help.
Thank you so much for being here with us. It is actually a rare treat, given your comparative lack of presence on the Guild Ball scene these days. I think you're variously missed and not missed, depending on who you talk to.
I don't think there's a lot of variation in that.
But you remain an interesting conversationalist and are often able to articulate ideas in ways that other people perhaps struggle with. And the topic of this podcast comes out of a conversation you and I were having about dice math in Guild Ball. My frustration on occasion is that sometimes you just lose games of Guild Ball because your dice crap out at critical moments. And I guess examples of that would be Shark games where he doesn't get the goals that he needs to, and it's all just downhill from there. But I think you can see that pattern play out at a smaller level, key interactions that don't hit the probability curve in the way that you may have planned for, and thus cause you great difficulty and perhaps cause you to lose the game in the longer run. You have a far more articulate take on this based on game theory, and I'm just wondering whether you might allow us to sit at your feet time to benefit from you imparting some wisdom.
Well, I'll do my best. And actually, as I understand it, the idea isn't necessarily from game theory, it's from probability theory. It's the idea of expected utility. So I think I talked about this with you already, Dave, but Campbell, I'll pose to you a question. Suppose we were to play a game where you were to flip a coin, and if you flipped heads, you won a dollar. If you flipped it twice in a row, you won $2, and so forth and so forth.
Yep.
How much money would you pay to play that game?
That's a very good question.
If you think about it, the expected value is infinite.
Yeah, but then on the 50-50 odds, then in theory, do you lose anything if you get it wrong?
That's the question, is how much are you willing to pay to play this game? And that would be what you lost if you didn't make any money.
Yeah, I guess you would pay half what the total value is or less. I don't know. Like if you're playing the game once to flip a coin.
But the total expected value is infinite.
Yeah, okay. So then potentially you could put down an infinite amount.
You could, but that's not a smart bet because...
I'm not a smart person.
Well, so let's just let that marinate.
In his defense, he's a very delicate lover.
Okay. So how much do I pay to play the game? So I can continuously keep flipping the coin, but as soon as I flip the wrong side, I'm out, correct? But if I keep flipping heads, I keep winning a dollar.
No, you keep winning double. So if you flip it twice in a row, you win two. If you flip it three times in a row, you win four, and so on.
Yeah, I mean, you'd be willing to pay a lot of money to play that if your potential. I guess it's a 50-50 potential each time to then double your money. So I don't know. Let's put a fiver, an Australian fiver. I'm not sure what that actually exchange rate was to the Trump dollar is. We'll go with
five. It's like 25 cents, I think.
Okay, we're going 25 cents.
No, actually, I think it's a little over $3. But so the idea is that even though the expected value is infinite, the utility of money is nonlinear, right? Because having $1 million is great. Having an extra million on top of that is not as valuable as having the first million, right?
Yep.
So, the utility of money is a curve. So, in that same way, you can use the idea of expected utility instead of expected value when you're thinking about dice math in a game. And in the situations that Dave was talking about, which are completely binary, there's really not a lot that can be done to mitigate that, except to try and maneuver the game such that you're not looking for binary options. So you can't really get around, if you need a goal to win, the math is just the math on that. And there's not really anything that can be done. But and now you're sort of getting to why the style that I prefer and that was preferred in Chicago for a while was the sort of low variance style, because it takes those binary dice rolls out. And instead, you're looking more at decision-making over the long term, and you can use the idea of utility to sort of outthink your opponent.
Do those binary situations, they don't completely disappear, though? So, for example, if you're playing that 4-1 style game, you get the four kills, then you get the goal. You've still got to make attacks to get to those four kills. So there are micro kind of situations where it is a little bit binary whether you hit or whether you hit that result, but you've just reduced it by putting a greater volume of those together with a lesser risk. Is that kind of what we're talking about?
But it's not binary, though, because there are several layers of results that can happen.
Oh, okay, no, that is fair. It's not like a goal or not a goal, absolutely.
And then in the way that you would try and mitigate taking a binary result is to take it in a situation where it's not binary win or lose, it's win or not win yet. So I guess the way you think about it and expect, if you're thinking about it in terms of expected value, it would be you look at the positive side and you multiply it by the utility you get, and you look at the negative side and multiply that by the negative utility of that action, and then you look at the composite of that and see if that's the right decision to make at that time. So if you're taking a goal for the win, but a miss loses you the game, then maybe you want to be more patient and try and manufacture a situation where you're taking a goal for the win, but the miss doesn't lose you the game immediately.
Yeah, and I think that applies to a lot of players too, because I think a lot of people would just go, oh, there's a goal on the table, I'm going to go for it, and not actually even bother to look at the negative side and what that situation brings around. Can you repeat what, you know, in terms of talking about the multiplying, so you're talking about the value that brings, you know, in terms of a VP or even just a momentum? Like, do you look at it on that level as well?
Utility is essentially a qualitative measure. It's not a quantitative measure because it's a qualitative in terms of how you evaluate whatever tree, whatever decision tree branch that is from. And so it's essentially the expression of your understanding of the board state.
So yeah, in your situation, and this is why you guys like to play this way, you understood that such that you felt your ability to read the table was better than the opponent. And so by keeping the game in this state, that's how you would beat an opponent. What happens when you come up against an opponent where they're willing to go for the high risk, high value? How does that affect that game style?
Well, it changes effectively everything in terms of how you read the decision tree. You know, if you're playing against a player, like there's a certain American player who plays an unbelievably slow version of Corsair. So if you're playing against him, Any flip side of your decision and then his decision is you're going to see his branch as being a very slow, deliberate action. Whereas you're playing against a very high variance player, then you have to, when evaluating the board state and evaluating your decision, look at the branch of the decision tree and say, you know, he's going to go for this wildly risky thing, which if it goes off is really, you know, really bad for you. So, and then you have to evaluate that.
And look at that as the negatives. I get what you're saying there. So how do you, I mean, do you value that when it comes to different players? And do you think the player that see the change in the board state faster is the one that's the more experienced player in terms of seeing those trees?
I don't know about more experience, but that's certainly a good indicator of being somebody who has a better understanding of the game.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a big part of understanding the game quickly. And then, and you also mentioned how fast can they do it. And that's a huge aspect of playing a game on a clock. It's not what you can do. It's what you can do in the amount of time allotted to do it. So if you're unable to make a practical decision using that information in, you know, a reasonable amount of time, then it doesn't matter how good your objective understanding of a game is.
Yeah, absolutely. Because you're still going to lose on one win condition.
Yeah, and it's in fact the one win condition that if you don't comply with, then you are guaranteed to lose. There's no mitigation for spending all of your time.
So we have a spread of guilds, and across that, I can see that you'd make the argument that some play towards this high risk, high reward approach. Some play towards, you know, the low variance, play the numbers approach. From what you're saying, it seems like regardless of what style of guild you might be playing or facing, there's moments in a game where you'll need to assess whether it's worth switching up to take that high variance versus staying the course. Is that a fair proposition?
Absolutely. You have to be flexible in knowing when to take risks. If you come in with a certain mindset of I'm not going to take risks or I'm only going to take risks, then you can just make bad decisions based on that. But if you're flexible, then, you know, you're open to opportunities that present themselves.
My great frustration is that Guild Ball seems to turn on small moments. So games can be decided on one interaction, which then either effectively ends the game or sets off a chain that over time will put you further and further behind. How could you use something like probability theory to help pull you out of a nosedive when something like that happens?
It's hard to pull yourself out of a nosedive, except to psychologically accept that even if your opponent has a likely path, that they still have to hit, you know, X, Y, and Z, and doing all of that is not necessarily the most likely thing. But it's really more to keep yourself out of situations where one little thing goes wrong and puts you into that nosedive. So usually if that happens, you've taken a big risk along the way and you don't necessarily realize that you have taken a big risk. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
I would suggest that there's guilds in that force you down that path of play, though. Maybe that's why I don't like sharks.
Well, I'd say maybe there are lineups rather than guilds that force you to do that, but sure, I get what you're saying.
I think this probably gets back to the point that, you know, this is why the Chicago style evolved in the first place. I mean, you probably sat back and did the math and went, well, over the longest period or over a longer period, this is the most logical way to play, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
Maybe that's the what's the value of these high risk plays when you know, your take on probability theory would push us towards a stable kind of reliable 4-1 style of game. Why is there any value in taking a high-risk approach to playing the game?
So far we've been talking as though if you're playing the low variance, then you're advantaged. Well, if you're in a situation where you feel like you're disadvantaged playing low variance because you feel like your opponent is stronger at evaluating the board state and making quick decisions, then you would definitely want to go with a higher variance because it mitigates skill.
Maybe this is why I don't like Shark.
Yeah, I mean, you have to, if you're in a position that you're taking more risks, then there's less skill involved. And if you feel like your opponent is stronger than you, then you would want less skill to be involved.
There's probably a speed factor as well. You know, if you're trying to slam in three goals faster than anybody can blink, that can throw your opponent off balance and force them into making some optimal decisions or...
Sure. I've always thought the strongest aspect of Shark was simply the level of pressure he exerts. Makes people make bad decisions.
Absolutely. I mean, I played a lot of the rats at the moment. And whilst they're good fun, minor guild, they've got some glaring matchups that aren't fantastic for them. But one thing I've noticed is, yeah, their play style is quite similar to Shark in that you want to play that high tempo game. You basically want to put them in a situation. And because they've got the added VP bonus, you know, tools of Vet Graves and Scourge, put them in a situation where if you're not threading the goal to speed the game up quickly, you're actually just threading the high VP takeouts and speeding it up that way. But based on what you've just said, and I've seen this happen many times, we played a league recently where every game I played, I think I only lost one, I think it was to Dave, but every other game, I gave up at least 8 VP every game. So they play the high tempo, but they don't, you know, they still leak the VP back. So you can push opponent, you know, over the line, but in a tournament setting where you've got criteria, you know, how many goals scored or, you know, point differential, they're just not the optimal guild.
Well, I don't think point differential means anything in a tournament setting unless the organized play documents change.
Yeah, no, it is strength of schedule, isn't it? But I mean, in terms of, what, you know, how close you're letting your opponent get to the, you know, their victory path, they seem to leak the VPs faster than, say, a Shark lineup does.
Yeah, the Goldilocks zone is smaller when you know you're giving up points.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just to change tack slightly, did you get to a point with Guild Ball where you were bored? Like what happened there? Was it a case of you felt you'd achieved what you needed to achieve and you moved on?
No, I don't think I ever grew bored with the game. I think I always found it interesting. There's enough change in the game. You know, it hasn't been very static, even though, you know, the current season's been going on for quite a while. It's you know, there's enough new players and erratas and things like that to keep it fresh, I think.
So do you think you'll get back on the competitive circuit at some point?
No.
Maybe lift your current rating from 25 back to 1, where it sat for, you know, maybe 5 months after you stopped?
No, I don't see myself ever playing competitively again.
You enjoy playing the game, though. I mean, obviously you had a game with Dave, so you jump on Vassal occasionally and, you know, when someone asks, or... Because I know from a friend of ours, Mr. McGraw, he always saw playing you as kind of the pinnacle of just, you know, someone at a very high level, you know, wanting to basically, you know, beat you in a game was just a mountain he wanted to climb.
He still hasn't reached that peak.
We're going to leave that.
No, so what I've been doing lately is I've actually been doing a lot of training.
Yep.
So I've been helping some friends improve their game and use some like chess techniques to try and help them think about the game and just not just Guild Ball, but sort of think about gaming better. And I enjoy that. I sort of enjoy the teaching aspect of it and helping friends improve.
Can you divulge any of these techniques, or are they too complex and you actually need to be showing them?
Things like you're playing a game and and your opponent is vocalizing their whole thought process. And while he's doing that, I'm sort of Socratically asking questions, trying to guide them to see options better and to sort of broaden how they view the game.
Okay.
And then some things with, you know, I've been helping someone else with the time management a little bit, using some like blitz chess ideas to get them to play faster, to stop clocking out, things like that.
So, talk about that. Like what sort of blitz chess techniques can people adopt to help them with their clock game?
Well, there are a few. There's actually sort of a tempo to the physical back and forth of the clock. So you get into a situation where you want to be thinking on your opponent's time and your time, and you want to basically have all of that happen as much as possible on your opponent's time. So you want to take these quick actions. So if they move something, you're immediately moving it, hitting the clock, putting the pressure on, and saying all of the thought for both of us is going to happen on your time.
So in Guild Ball terms, is that identifying certain models? I mean, we all know you've got a mascot. Some mascots do fuck all. Is it identifying those models in your guild that you can, okay, if they move, I've got like a piece I want to move at the start of my turn. There's a few kind of gray area in the middle where I can actually just do that and put the clock back on them.
Sometimes. A lot of times what you want to do is you actually want to sort of connect patterns of models such that you know that you're essentially not activating six models, because if there's a pattern that works in some combination, then you can be activating effectively fewer in your own head.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, so like a tool up overclock or whatever, those support models automatically happen before then the model that does.
Well, it's not even before. Yeah, you just think of Ratchet and Hoist and Mother
as one.
And so that lets you it shrinks the tree quite a lot, and it's a good I think the term is a pairing technique.
Yeah, it's almost like the blacksmiths are built that way, in a sense, in that they a team that operates in modules. So, you know, that interreliance means that they will probably activate in ways that support each other. So instead of like six players, you got modules, three modules, two.
Mm. It's obviously more interaction. It makes it a lot simpler to think about.
Yeah. That's quite interesting. So blitz chess techniques, order of activation techniques, any other more general strategies that easily adapted from chess to Guild Ball? The background here is that, you're Luke in The Last Jedi. You're on the island, you're drinking the green milk, you're there training new Padawans. What other opportunities do you have for teaching here?
Was that a Star Trek reference?
No, that was a Star Wars reference, Jordan. Star Wars.
Subtle.
I think you knew that.
So the biggest clock management technique you can take from chess is just in practical decision making. So you have to know, based on how much time you have left on your clock, how wide you can look at a decision tree and how much pairing you have to do. Because there are times when you're looking at these different moves and it's not immediately clear which one is better. In those times, you just have to, fast make a decision and
choose one.
And you don't have to look too broadly, and you have to activate very quickly. And that's something where I see a lot of players, once their clock gets down to around 10 minutes, they don't necessarily have the sense of urgency that they should about their play. And they just sort of keep playing at the same pace. And one of the biggest things you can take away from, from timed chess is you have to play to the pace of the clock. So if you have less time left, then that affects how you can even think about the game.
Is there no value in maybe slowing down, taking better activations in those circumstances? You know, if you work back from how many activations you need to win a game, what's the value of quick actions versus slower, more considered actions within a time-limited context?
Yeah, I mean, it's a curve. You know, it's not a linear thing you can think about like that. But so if you can concretely solve the position, then you should take, up to having, 1 second left, right? If that's how long it takes to solve the position. But until you've effectively solved your path to 12, then you should be moving faster in accordance with the clock time left.
So even a decision that's not, the 100% best decision, if you sat there and thought about it for an hour, is actually better taken fast if it's slightly less.
Exactly, yeah. That was actually one of the biggest criticisms of Garry Kasparov, is that sometimes he would look too much for the perfect move, and he would miss a practical chances in faster time controls because he couldn't find the perfect move. So, in fact, searching for it is kind of a mistake in that context.
Yeah, to actually burn that amount of time when in a time-based game. Yeah.
Yeah, because it's an irrefutable loss to run out of time.
I think that has existential implications. I feel a bit shaken now.
Yeah. So talking about training friends and whatnot, I mean, we're doing obviously a bit of training for WTC. I'm making the assumption that you've obviously played, and had your head still in the game as much as not on a competitive level, but, looking at the guilds. Can I ask, what you would consider, because I've asked a few people this, in terms of WTC, like what would be a solid, three different guilds you think would actually work quite well together into the WTC, given, what we've kind of seen the meta evolve to?
I think if I were to select a team of three players, it would be Fish, Engineers, and Brewers.
And exactly.
Well, I think the Brewers present the biggest problem right now. And I think Fish still have something that no other guild has, which is the two captains that play the drastically different play styles and do it well. So that's problematic. And I am very high on the strength of Engineers.
In the sense that they can play both control and goal scoring games?
Yeah, and they can play damage a lot of different ways. And Engineers are a very strategically flexible team.
And they're quite resilient. I mean, it's something I've noticed just jumping back and forth between them and Rats. You don't tend to go down as hard when you're, sturdy, tough hide and reanimate. They're kind of pretty good abilities.
Yeah, no, I have a six that I've been playing a little bit that I think is very strong, and I would take it against pretty much any team and like my chances.
Yeah, nice.
Brewers, because of the strength of Vet Decimate, I'm assuming?
Pretty much, or at least, if not the strength, at least the level of problem that she causes.
The threat, yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's especially with their condition clearing, there aren't too many easy ways of basically mitigating her in a turn either.
No, it's very difficult. And even when you mitigate her, a lot of times all that means is that she gets to go but without all of her buffs, but it's still really good.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, in your opinion, do you think she's slightly, slightly too far, like needs a bit of toning down?
No, she's well past that.
She is. I mean, acrobatic.
No, that chisel is slightly too far. She's way too far.
Have you had much experience with that? You played the chisel or just more from...
Yeah, I was helping somebody prepare for British Nationals and doing a lot of work with Masons until the last minute when it turned out that model wasn't going to be released.
Oh, brutal. Yeah, so you reckon she's even worse, I guess, with the whole hammer scenario?
Not worse. I mean, I think she's definitely too strong, but not like off the charts like Decimate is. Yeah. Now, the level of one of the main weaknesses of Masons was their susceptibility to control, and that was a balanced weakness. And now it simply isn't a weakness anymore. She effectively removes their susceptibility to control.
Yeah, absolutely.
Any teams you wouldn't recommend taking in a WTC lineup?
Ratcatchers. Definitely wouldn't take Ratcatchers or the Falconers.
No Falcon love, yeah. I guess the minor guilds don't offer that same level of flexibility and roster choice, which, I mean, is unavoidable purely by design. Falcons, are an interesting one. I've played a few games with them on Vassal, and
they seem like the least interesting.
Oh, just in the sense that they are ranged butchers, almost, with some weird setup mechanics. Huge potential damage output, but the reality of actually getting to that high-end damage is mitigated by your opponent's ability to counterplay.
Yeah, I mean, Divana has a flat threat range, accepting their death from above, which, by the way, is stolen from 40k.
Noted.
Nice.
We'll put this in the liner notes for you, Jordan.
I didn't realize we were making a record.
If this is not beautiful music, I don't know what is.
I think we need some Kenny G playing.
Oh, my God.
Somebody has to be the worst musician, right? So why not him?
Yeah, fair.
But no, I mean, Divana's threat is so flat and so counterattackable that I just find it totally uninteresting.
There's a lot of setup there needed as well. Like, you know, often you'll be in a situation where you want your captain's first activation to get a kill and an activation advantage, perhaps even a goal as well. And she just does not have, in many cases, the ability to reliably do that. You know, the eagle's got to be in the right place. You probably want some harriers out there to actually get some work done as well. And there's an amount of time pressure that comes with her, I think. Like, if she is under that time pressure, she will suffer, and a good opponent will know how to do that.
It seems not that hard to just sort of stay away from her or force her to go at certain times, which are disadvantageous.
That said, it's kind of an interesting theme. I quite like the eagle. I like them as a guild. I like what they add to hunters. That's what they really shine.
Well, they basically just add Minerva. Minerva is very strong.
Targi is the he's the bomb. He's so good. I love him, Jordan. It's a pair bonded. We're gonna build a nest together, make a beautiful egg. I just really like him.
Just have this picture of you regurgitating food into his mouth.
All right, we're going to Photoshop that into the cover title too. So you didn't mention any Union there. Thoughts on them, or are they, like, you know, maybe close behind, or given their flexibility at the moment?
I think they're a very, very solid team. You know, you asked me what three I'd pick, and I told you,
that's fair.
Union would be close behind, I think. Yeah, I mean, Vet Rage is still extremely good. I don't know. I'm not really up on the release schedule, so I don't know which of the new models will be out by then or not, or if they'll even count as Union models or not. So
I don't even think Steamforge now at the moment. I think there's a few release dates that are kind of moving around a little bit. With all due respect, I'm assuming it's production and whatnot, so I don't think they know. All we know is that if and when the Vet Fangtooth and Season Speaker come out, that they will be momentarily in Union. That's about it until the Season 4 drop and the Church kind of get their own area. So, no, it's what I was going to say is those teams have, like, that you would select, is that also based on the time thing as well? Because based on the conversation we've just had, talked about, you know, time pressure and that sort of thing, and those three seem to have a style that can be played quite fast. And so Dave and I have talked about this with, say, Vet Rage or whatever, where you're not looking for these janky interactions. There is a consistent way you play those teams. Does that play into why you would choose those for WTC?
That would factor into my decision if you were to ask me to pick teams for specific people.
Yep.
But no, not necessarily. I'm assuming that whoever's playing these, you know, guilds you asked me to pick would be able to handle them in proper amount of time.
Yep. So that wasn't one of the criteria.
If you said what guild should, you know, you or Dave or I don't know who else is on your team play, then I would say that how they can handle certain guilds in certain amount of times would definitely be a factor, and it should factor into any guild choice that you make if you're trying to play something competitively.
It's interesting in that Guild Ball seems, at a competitive level, seems to revolve around a certain number of competitive in quotation mark teams, I guess, dominating the schedule. Like, in terms of tournament play, is it the more, the better use of probability theory to pick a team that is reliably playable, something like a Corsair, a Vet Rage, or, you know, whatever Brewers at the...
Again, it goes back to how you rate your own skill versus the skill of the field.
Do you not think that there's some teams that can compensate for a comparative lack of skill?
Yeah, so if you rate yourself not at the top or not near the top of the field of a tournament you're going to, then you would want to play a guild that takes more risks. Hmm. Whereas if you rate yourself as being among the top players, then you would want to take a guild that takes less risks.
Hmm. So basically, Dave, you just asked Jordan to tell everyone who's not at the top to start using Shark. And I fucking hate that. I don't want any more Shark.
That's the logically correct thing to do from their point of view.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So sad.
Yeah, I know. And now you know what's going to fucking happen at Nationals. Everyone's going to rock up with either, like, you know, Shark or some Union, maybe, just to piss, like, Aaron off. Who knows?
I hope everybody's playing Brisket Union.
Does anyone actually play that? I can't remember the last time I played against anyone playing Brisket Union.
Statistically speaking, somebody must, right?
Yeah, okay. Look up on Longshanks. There's at least three games.
Well, I'm sure that once she loses access to 12 players, people will play her more. Sad thing is that's probably true.
You get the special snowflake syndrome kicks in at that point, right? So you get these people trying to make it theirs and come up with some weird janky way of doing it, and then the clock themselves.
Wouldn't Timmy jump in at that point and prove the point? I think
I've always thought Brisket is actually pretty decent.
Yeah, I mean, she's not bad. I think she's great when she's got the ball. How do you get the ball back? It's always been the issue. I think a legendary.
I always liked her when receiving, because I always feel like you can take your receiving goal, and then at some point you'll get a goal opportunity from the legendary, and then after that it's just, can your union team kill two players?
Yeah, which generally the answer is yes to that, right?
I would think so.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, Vet Fangtooth and Season Spigot both provide some pretty good opportunities for goal scoring and for takeouts. So, yeah, I don't think she'll be bad. It should be a little bit of fun. I don't know that I'd play her heaps. Yeah, time will tell, I suppose.
Yeah, it's the TAC 5 captain curse.
Yeah, it's not.
You can always go to Smoke and go to 4. That's just fucking terrible.
Well, Smoke is TAC dash, right?
Yeah, I know. It's TAC dash.
Looking at it, I'm pretty sure it's TAC 4.
Yeah, it's pretty ordinary.
I think you guys are smoke less drugs or something.
Yeah, fair. So
I'm purely a needle guy.
That explains so much.
Now we're getting somewhere. Absolutely.
I feel like we're peeling back the complicated layers of geology that's covering the precious ore body that is Jordan Knack.
Getting a look into my operating system.
So, bringing it back to the real world, Dave likes to spend time in fantasy. You're still around the game a little bit. Predictions for season four, and what that maybe brings. I mean, obviously you're not in a competitive kind of mindset, so it's not like you've got a wish list of things you want to play. But in terms of the game and how you perceive the game, do you have anything that you think would be good for the game, bad for the game, things you'd like to see?
So that's not really a prediction, right? A prediction would be predicated on information. So you're asking. So what you're actually asking is what do I think should happen?
I love how low level, how low key hostile this whole fucking conversation is. It's brilliant. Sorry, John.
Continue.
Are you asking what I think should change or what needs to change?
What would you like to see change? How's that?
The biggest thing I'd like to see change involves the game plan cards.
And
I don't think that they should be dealt. I think everyone should have, there should be a pool of cards and that each person has access to, and anyone can select, let's say it's 5 cards from that pool without showing your opponent, and then that's your card pool. And then from there, there's a bluffing aspect to using it, but there's no luck aspect to drawing it.
That's fair. Yeah, because not landing a +7.
I just think that's the best mechanic.
It's just fucked.
Yeah, no, that's fair. And is that a memo that you've sent to Steamforge? They don't take your emails anymore. I think Perkins is still open. He likes it.
If there's one person who would not listen to me, it would be Jamie Perkins.
Oh, fantastic.
I just don't think he holds my opinion in high regard.
I think, I don't know. You might be surprised. But hey, I don't know your relationship. I don't know who's touched who or not touched each other. Look, I'm not, making any judgments here.
The amount of editing marks I have for this episode, you would not believe.
You know what I love about this is how much you hate editing, and it's going to be the worst episode yet in terms of your editing time.
Yeah,
so we might have to actually pay you for this one, Dave.
It'll be worth it in the long run. We'll drop this shit like it's hot. God, it's fire.
So the going back to playing chess, is that... has that got anything to do with, the variance or the random component that is dice within Guildball or any other game? Or chess is just a home that, you find comfortable?
Yeah, it's more sort of my base game, I think over the past year I've played a little over 3,000 games of chess.
Crumbs, that's a couple.
So, just Blitz chess, because how long does a... How long does a normal game last for?
Well, Blitz game, I usually play 3 minutes, so the maximum time would be 6 minutes. Average is maybe 4.5.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. So is this where the needle comes in? You just, you get on the gear.
Well, I guess that's more of a line of powder kind of.
You can shoot up this. It's very, very amenable to that approach.
Yeah, I guess this is the American Midwest. Finding meth shouldn't be that hard.
To be fair, you're probably smoking it at that point. Anyway, how did we get into this?
We keep going back to it, sorry.
You can sort of dust it over your cereal. It gives you a nice little wake-up high.
It's better than sugar. I mean, sugar's going to fucking kill you. Let's face it.
Exactly. I mean, you wouldn't believe all the negative health effects of sugar.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Obesity, epidemic levels.
Diabetes.
So, I mean, basically, meth just cures obesity.
I reckon we can come up with a whole ad here and just start pitching it to our relative governments. I honestly think we're onto something.
Do public service announcements.
Yeah. We'll have to do an ad at the start and end of this episode. I think so.
Oh, my God. This episode's a train wreck. I love it.
Did you really expect anything else?
No, this is exactly what I was after. Yeah,
and that's what the punters want.
You've played like a low variance style, as usual, and delivered, as usual. Any declarative pronouncements you'd like to make, you know, feel free. You've got a platform. Anybody you want to alienate?
I feel like I've done a pretty broad job of that already in my lifetime.
Right. What about this? I haven't
alienated you yet than I meant to. How about that?
Okay. Well, that's fair.
Just throw that out there for everybody.
It's kind of you to do that, Jordan, which is maybe an indication. A leaf has been turned. All this coaching, giving back to people, you know, helping to grow communities, grow skills, impart your wisdom. I mean, that's almost benevolent.
I mean, that's really the whole reason I started that podcast, was I just wanted to talk about high-level strategy and effectively teach people how to think about games better. But I don't feel like that's really what we accomplished. I just mostly insulted people.
Well, I think you guys did have an enormous influence. You know, strictly the worst, you know, under the NAC roster, had an enormous influence on the game, the way the game has been played. I mean, the fact that you guys coined the whole Chicago style of Guild Ball, and it persists to this day, so I don't think it was all bad. I mean, sometimes people like to shoot the messenger because the messenger's a dick. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's also a marketing position. I mean, we position ourselves as dickheads who like abusing people, and we've never pretended not to be that, so, you know.
I feel like Australians just sort of get away with that, though.
It's true.
We do.
It has to be the silly accent.
Yeah, and we drink a lot, so people are like, yeah, lovable drunks, fucking idiots. Just roll with it, man. I guess we've both got our crosses to bear.
But right now, ours is an obese orange man.
Oh. Why couldn't you teach the American people how to play better? My God. Teach them voting math.
You know what I find fascinating about Trump is that you go to like my kid's school, and every one of them knows who Donald Trump is. You ask them any other president of the United States, or pretty much like your own prime minister, they have no fucking idea who they are.
Yours is what, Malcolm Turnbull?
Currently.
Yeah,
for a little bit longer.
I think he just lost 6 by-elections over the course of a weekend. So
I thought they only held 5, didn't they? Did they hold 6? I don't know.
Yeah, he lost the bonus one as well. 5.
I mean, does that shred his coalition?
I think it shreds his credibility. He will have to go to a general election at some point in the very near future. So it's not looking good for Malcolm. But he's got a mansion. He's an ex-banker. I'm pretty sure he doesn't give a fuck.
Yeah, he was a millionaire before he started, right? So
you guys gonna bring Tony Abbott back?
Speaking of robots, yeah.
Yeah,
that guy in Budgie Smugglers. Nah, I don't think it's a good look.
Here's the inside scoop, Jordan. He's a bit of a fuckhead.
He was largely considered to be. We sort of thought of him as your George Bush.
Boom. I'm not sure if that's a compliment, but I think it is. Well, I think it is.
You know, 10 years ago, that was like the worst insult ever. Now looking less and less bad.
Yeah, I think Tony thought of himself as our George Bush as well, and therein lies some of the problem.
Yeah, I think given the world politics and the fact that we're starting to turn towards like various TV and sporting personalities, I think we just start looking, you know, in our Olympic team. I mean,
Imran Khan just win the Olympics?
Absolutely.
He was a hell of an all-rounder.
Oh, my God. That guy just had a wicked, wicked left-arm pace bowler. He could hit the ball. Fantastic. And goes into politics. I'm not sure how good a politician he is, but obviously good enough to win an election. Or claim it, at least.
Good enough to make the military rig it for you.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I mean, that's
you have to have some skill to do that.
Yeah, it's not easy. Skill or money, one of the two.
I mean, in some ways, rigging an election can be harder than actually just winning it outright.
Yeah, but you don't have to deal with the bullshit of legitimacy and voter expectations, do you? You're pretty much rolling a dictatorship at the
moment. Yeah, exactly.
Very efficient way of doing it. All I know is that Brondo's got what plants crave.
It's a little Idiocracy reference for you.
Jordan! Fuck! Oh, no, it was Pat. Pat was the one who couldn't ever get film references, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
Although I think he actually did see that one.
He'd be happy with the Brewers Renaissance, I imagine. It's,
I would assume so.
Yeah, you hang out with those boys anymore, or you don't really...
No.
It's Vince, isn't it?
Huh?
Vince, I will say it right now, Vince Kirkov is a homewrecker.
No, that would be me. Vince just picked up the pieces, I guess.
No,
I've actually known Vince a very, very long time.
All right.
Yeah, I mean, his dad used to coach me in Little League Baseball when I was 8 years old.
I retract my earlier comment. He's like the long-suffering stepmother who's putting the family back together at the cost of her own health.
I can sort of see that.
I'm sorry, Vince. Hold on, just let me make another editing mark.
I don't know. Well, I assume that... So Vince, like, in person is a very funny guy, but I feel like he wouldn't translate that well to radio. So I assume the new cast is kind of boring. Am I kind of right?
It's hard for us to comment on that. I think we might have to chat to our lawyers. Yeah. Yeah. And yeah.
Just got to make another editing mark. So to bring this back to Gilboa, I mean, do you have any interest in any more beyond just helping people? You know, you just, that's it, coach, you know, play for
guys here. I mean, the casual game every now and then is all right. I don't actually have any models anymore, so if I do go to tournaments, it's sort of whatever I can borrow. So that's, but no, it's really more of the teaching and training that's interesting me right now.
I imagine you rocking up to a tournament and just taking whatever you could get would probably appeal to you. You know, seem to be somebody who'd enjoy that kind of challenge. All right, this will do. We'll see how I go.
Yeah, I used to do that in War Machine sometimes, where you just sort of show up and see who's brought an extra army.
Any predictions for American Nationals this year? Any players who stand out as far as you're aware?
No, it's rather a... Wait, where is it this year?
Who even knows, mate? I haven't looked. I haven't done my research.
I mean, if it's anywhere in the Southeast, then my money's on Brian White.
He does have a pretty good tournament record.
You don't think young Botsy can thresh it out again?
I mean, he's certainly capable of it, but he wouldn't be who I would bet on.
Nashville.
Yeah, okay, so that's probably the closest place it could be to him, so I'd imagine he would be my odds-on favorite.
All right, there you are. $10, Brian White, fantastic.
How many times would you flip that coin?
Probably more than you could afford.
Ooh.
Fair.
And just, you know, the answer is largely thought that, the mathematical answer to that question is largely thought to be 2, because it's considered to be logarithmic.
Okay, all right.
So basically you're saying that my fiver was wrong, although at a conversion rate getting me down to $3, I'm close, basically.
There you go.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm close to the right answer, but wrong. That's, yeah, my wife tells me that a little bit.
I don't understand how you're still married.
Well, you're the one that encourages me to go to tournaments all over the world, so, you know, I don't know. I just blame you. So it's Dave's fault. He's already booked the accommodation.
Yeah. It's up to you to walk on through.
Fair.
So are you guys both going to the WTC?
Yeah.
Absolutely, yep.
Can't wait. It should be fun. I don't really know what to expect.
Who's your third guy?
Tobias.
Tobias.
You guys are going to get crushed.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, probably. Probably.
But is there not joy in just playing? Do we all forget how to just have fun?
Well, what's that?
Doesn't compute. I mean, it's like when you ask Siri, you know. You just get those standard kind of responses.
Well, I mean, it entirely depends on how drunk we get, I think.
It is Poland, so it'll be very cheap.
And this is the thing. Do you go and drink and play games? Take it super seriously? Maybe there's a balance to be struck in the middle there, which I hope is
good. I feel like you sort of have to make that decision as a team, because if one guy is not on the same page, then
yeah, kind of so,
experience for the other guy.
You're dragging the other guys down or vice versa.
What about if two guys think it's okay?
Then Tobias is going to be very unhappy with how much money he spent on that trip.
That's pretty true.
Yeah. That's fair. Yeah, I'll let you chat to him about that, Dave.
I think we have to give it a red hot go. I think we have to give it our all, whatever that means.
I think I was actually watching him play on Vassal a day or two ago.
Oh, yeah.
Any observations?
He's not playing well.
What was the matchup?
Yeah, I think he was playing Brewers into Engineers. I mean, both players are playing. This is one of those games that you watch and cringe.
Yeah, and you can see the mistakes or see things that maybe could have gone differently. Sounds like we're going to need to sign up one Mr. Jordan Knack to do some training of the Australian WTC side, or at least one of them. I think the other one's just...
I'd love to. I like Tobias. He's a really nice guy.
Yeah, he's
Too easy. Well, we're on it. I mean, obviously, Dave's picked up games against you. I think I need to get absolutely towed to realize how far I am from the edge of the wave, the edge of the curve. So,
I don't think we've ever played, have we?
I don't think we have. No. Right. Well, we'll pin one in. I'll send you a message after this, and I'll get my people to talk to your people. Or robots or computers. I don't know how it works.
It's just the mainframe, man. Just talk to the mainframe.
Okay. Nice.
God. I feel like a Tron reference is appropriate right here, but I'm not. It's too early in the morning for me to come up with one.
Ah, fair. I was going old school and just going to do Skynet in my diary, but okay.
Well, isn't Tron older than that?
Yeah, probably. Probably.
Depends. Old Tron or Remake Tron, which is.
Well.
Remake Tron is shit.
Well, Ultron is also shit, but it's nostalgic shit.
Oh, I was watching Raiders of the Lost Ark the other night. Pretty good. It's got that kind of classic Hollywood look now. You know, it's a little bit, the colors a little bit oversaturated. Oh, I was quite enjoying it. It's a good film.
Yeah, old Steven Spielberg, pretty good.
Yeah. There was a golden period of American cinema there in the '80s. What happened?
Harrison Ford got older.
Maybe you could coach him on not aging.
He was already in. In Android's Dream, do Android's Dream Electric Sheep or whatever the movie was of that.
Yeah, Blade Runner. I like how
so he knows all about
the literary reference, though, Jordan.
I'm a big Philip K. Dick fan. To me, it boggles my mind why they changed the title of that. That's such a great title.
Yeah, but you can just see like a bunch of movie executives sitting around going, "Whoa, this is nobody's gonna go watch."
That's the same with like Total Recall. You know, Total Recall, which is also a Philip K. Dick adaptation. Yeah. I think it was originally called "We'll Remember It for You Wholesale."
Yeah, too wordy. That'll never test with a focus group.
They did dumb it down.
Fucking Hollywood executives.
Speaking of bad remakes there, too. Oh, my God.
All right, well, we've talked about probability theory. We've talked about chess strategy as applied to Guild Ball. We've sledged, which is good. I think we've categorically panned the Australian WTC team's chances of any victory whatsoever. So do we have anything else to talk about?
I mean, this is your show, guys. I'm just here for the ride.
I mean, I think it's a rhetorical question. Like, have we reached the end of the road?
I guess we can talk about cricket for a while.
Go for it. Yeah. What do you want to start with? Ball tampering. Yep.
I mean, that's the easy one, right?
I think we just packaged this under national shame with the WTC stuff.
National shame. Yeah. I mean, at least Smith and Warner will be back for the World Cup in 2019.
Little victories, I suppose.
I don't know. They just got hammered against England in the ODI side, and they're really not a good Test side or a One Day side. And they chose, you know, the captain is basically chosen because he's the least asshole on the team, not because he's actually good at cricket.
Did you play at WTC?
Did I? No, I didn't.
Do you think they went with a similar strategy for selection last year?
Well, probably not. I was originally on the team, but I dropped out. So.
I see. Okay. All right.
And I was one of the selectors too. So I know for a fact that not only was I a selector, but Dan Sammons was also a selector last year. So being an asshole was more of a plus than a minus.
Oh, fantastic.
It was just the background noise against which everything else occurred. Yeah, that's right. The Australian test team is not performing at its best. I think we have to acknowledge that.
Tim Payne he doesn't belong as a captain, in my opinion.
Yeah, he just snuck back into the side, you know, not long before all that happened anyway. So
yeah, I mean, he hasn't had a first class century in like 8 years or something like that.
Mm.
He doesn't even play for his state in first class.
So I think to bring this back to a Guild Ball podcast, we probably have to release we have to read out the Guild Ball release schedule or something just to throw in some relevant content. So what I might do is
but I thought the release schedule isn't at all relevant because it's not correlated to when models actually come out.
Accurate, or what shape they come out in. You know, what mold they use.
That's true, but all we need is Guild Ball related content.
So it's like bistro math, right?
What the fuck?
It's a Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
It's been a long time since I've read it. I can't remember it.
Bistro math, the math of restaurants. Things like however many people you say is going to be there on your reservation, that's the only number of people that cannot actually show up.
This particular episode has taken many meandering turns, and I like it. I don't think I'd change it.
I think it's going to be an editing fun time for you. I'm actually just trying to find the
relationship. We've been talking for over an hour, and I assume when the episode comes out, it'll be like a half hour long.
It'll be 15 minutes. It'll be an intro, bit of politeness. That'll be about it.
It'll be like just smash cuts of you stopping mid-sentence and finishing on a completely different sentence. it'll be an exercise in absurdism, which is kind of what we were hoping for. So
Cubist podcasting.
Yeah. If you want to, yeah. Maybe impressionist, given that like you need to be able to stand a little bit away from it to properly comprehend it.
Yeah, but it looks so much like a train wreck that I think if you just call it cubist, you can get away with it.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Maybe we could go. We'll go Jackson Pollock with it. Say that we painted some canvas and sprayed it with ropes and beers.
If anything, it's more of a Magritte than a Pollock.
Mm.
Great. Look at you, fucking literate, educated. An understanding of art history, mathematics.
The typical American.
Well played. Your president must be so proud. So proud.
I'm sure he'll tweet about it any day now.
It's better than that. Sure. Well, that might be a good point to pull up Stumps.
Ooh, nice. Yeah. Stick a fork in it, call Bad Light, and we're done.
Yeah.
You bowled your overs.
We've bowled our overs. Most of them were wides. I think you bowled a few decent ones.
Threw some no-balls in there.
There were some massive no-balls in there.
It's been interesting, and we hope that maybe one day in the not too distant future we can do this again.
Yeah, it's been a good time. Always enjoy talking to you guys.
Yeah, cheers, Jordan, and good on you for looking after the community and doing a bit of coaching. Hopefully, I can get some coaching from you.
Yeah, I'd be happy to help.
Too easy. I'll hit you up, mate.
Sounds good.
And welcome back, and it's like I'm still laughing from the intro to the outro, yet all this time has actually transpired. David, how are you?
I'm as good as I was when we kicked off, mate.
It's amazing you can laugh at that period of time. I love it.
It's like a medieval malady of some sort where, you know, you get the laughing sickness and you'd laugh until you died.
Oh, yeah. Well, I hope not, but okay. Yeah, fair. So Skynet talk, it was good. We, I think, established that Jordan is a robot, which is fine. He still humoured us like Siri does when I ask ridiculous questions. So, yeah, it was a great conversation.
Siri, find burrito.
Oh, haven't done that one. I've asked Siri to beatbox, though. Hilarious. Love it. Yeah.
That's Siri, man. Mm. Do you ever say please and thank you to Siri? Do you do that?
No. Should I?
I mean, I'm just hedging my bets for when, like, eventually they take over.
Yeah, that's fair. But, I mean, do they understand the niceties? I mean, is that really, you know, or did they just go, nah, he dies first because he's been sucking up to us for the last fucking 10 years?
Well, now you've really put me in a quandary.
So, David, do we have any news and announcements / thank yous / just things to fill the outro?
Well, Campbell, we do. The most significant of which would be Australian Nationals, the 25th and 26th of August. It is just around the corner at the time of recording. We've got about 3 weeks until Nats. You're excited?
You're very excited. Very excited. Had no idea what I'm taking. Matty G keeps telling me to take rats. I might humour him. Don't know. Be fun, though. It's going to be an awesome time. Get to catch up with all the guys, which is that's the fun bit, right? Like, you know, having a few beers, chatting with, you know, old mates that we've met through the gaming community, so I can't wait.
Yeah, there's a few people I'm particularly excited to see.
Yeah.
They know who they are.
Okay.
Yeah. We should also probably shout out our good mate, one Jesse Dickbeak Heiss, owner, operator of freecitygames.com. He's been good, mate. He dropped those Falconers into the mail this week, and they got to me.
It's a good thing they got to you.
Well, you know, you've got to work on your game with Jesse.
No, I blame Australia Post, Jesse. You know, I've had conversations about it. It's fine. I'm not blaming him just yet. But he is a legend. He is a pillar of the community. He supports lots of tournaments. He's been running the Free Cities Cups or individual cups that we've been running online Vassal tournaments. Good fun. And he's, you know, obviously making sure that he looks after the community, always sending shit out right on time. So what a champion.
Hey, Campbell, did you know that if you purchase from freecitygames.com and use the code DoubleDodge10, DoubleDodge10, you'll get 10% off your purchase?
Bullshit. I call bullshit.
No, it's true. I tried it. It even worked for me. I don't know if that's bending the rules. I don't know.
Quite possibly.
Frankly, I don't care. All I know is it works, and I use it.
Nice. Nah, he's a champ. Well done. So pump that in, people. Get your 10% off of your plastic funsy toys.
There's one other shout-out I wanted to throw, Cam. This was a story that warmed my cold, dead heart. It stoked the fire once more. I just want to shout out to Spencer Stevens, who went through this emotional roller coaster after he lost his Double Dodge widget, and he posted this stuff on Twitter. He seemed genuinely distraught, and I did what I could to sympathize, but you know, like I can't magic these things out of thin air. But anyway, Spence did the smart thing, and he eventually ordered a new widget and a new stubby holder to go with it, but after he'd done that, guess what rematerialized?
Get out.
No word of a lie. Double Dodge widget back like a fucking boomerang.
They are like that. I mean, you know, we've tested them. I've pinged them at people, but usually in a confined space, so they don't generally come back that quick.
Yeah, you got to get the wind lift right. You
know, yeah.
It's like a glider.
What a legend, Spencer. You're a champion. You guys can jump on the website. We have the widgets on their own, all of the stubby holders, or both together. I'll post them out. We make about 50 cents off it. It's fantastic to international people or Australian people. We actually make some money. It's great. But, no, we really like seeing stuff like that on the table, especially on streams. Shout out to Jason Mountain for not putting any of our fucking widgets on the table. He claimed that he was going to try to, but didn't, instead used conditioned ice.
You know what I realized watching British Nats? I realized that Mountain looks like somebody I would never trust with my nana.
Accurate. That is completely accurate.
And I've told him that to his face. Well, you know, directly. And he agreed. He's like, yeah, don't leave your nana with me. That would be dumb.
Fair. Hey, speaking of, well, this would be a person that you would trust your nana with, but a shout out, congratulations to our good mate Haydos for losing CanCon final. I love the guy, but the congratulations is to his stoic nature. This guy has gone to WinterCon, not CanCon. He's gone to WinterCon. He's played his ass off, gone into the final. He's really been leveling up. And just when, you know, he'd messaged me saying it's fucked, the game's over, I've stuffed things up, he's knuckled down and just about pulled it off on a clock win, went down to a narrow loss, unfortunately for him. So congratulations for coming second.
And he's playing Alchemist as well. Like, fair cop, mate. Nice way to go against the general consensus. You keep swimming against the tide. You go, Glencoco. Four for you.
Yeah. You be you, Haddos. You be you.
I don't have anything else. It's been a while between drinks, so, you know, here we are. We're not dead, you fuckheads. We're not dead.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're just lazy.
And speaking of lazy, we like to get paid for being lazy. If you go to patreon.com/doubledodge, you can pay us for being completely lazy. No, we use that money, and we have for the WTC to get the dickhead Australians overseas, and I'm sure the rest of the world loves that about us. So jump on there. There are different tier levels. We send you out widgets and stubby holders if you decide to sponsor us at $5 or $10, and we really appreciate it because, yes, we do not get paid for this. Both of our normal jobs pay us a lot higher per hour, but we don't care. We just really enjoy it.
Yeah. Oh, my God. It's – yeah, I don't know.
It's not. It doesn't even pick you about, does it?
No. But you do it for love. You do it for love.
Mm.
You take out the garbage for your wife for love. You make a podcast for love. I'm going to play Wang back and get us the fuck out of here, mate.
Do it. Do it.
Yep.